Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got professional walleye tournament angler Corey Heiser back on the show. We've had Corey on a bunch of times. He's always a great interview, full of great information and fun stories. More recently, if you follow him on social media, Corey Heiser Fishing, you'd know that he fished the Van Hook Classic, a Lakes Kakawea tournament here in early June. Very popular, very competitive tournament here in North Dakota every year. Happens in early June up on Van Hook Bay in Lakes Kakawea. It's typically a really, really good bite. This year, the tournament had some challenges. Mother Nature threw a big monkey wrench, especially on day two. A big storm front came in and a heavy wind blow. And so just a really a fun tournament to talk to Corey about, for him to come over and fish a team tournament, like a regional team tournament on Lake Sakakawea, which is right here in my backyard where I sit in Bismarck. I had to just hit him up and get the story. So a very fun update from Corey on the tournament season so far, and a little bit of a deep dive into the highs and lows of the Van Hook Classic with Corey Heiser. Let's get to it. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. I think it'll be appropriate if we maybe just get a full recap of your season so far, Corey, because I haven't talked to you all year, and I don't even know when I'm going to talk to you next, so I want to cover as much ground and what's kind of been, what the progression of the season has been, because, I don't know, it's just kind of always fun. Maybe there'll be a little bit of a rabbit hole we can go down periodically through the timeline here. So let's, where did your season start this year?
Well, we started on Lake Sharp in South Dakota, and it has been an absolute whirlwind of a season. As you and I were briefly talking about, I bought a property, a new house and a shop east of Crookston. So that time frame really had me scrambling because I tried to get closed, moved in. I had a boat coming, so I had to get the Ranger rigged up, trying to get moved in there. And then all at once, all of that came time to pack the truck up and headed down to do one of my favorite events of the year, and that was Shields Fishing University. So we went to Chamberlain Lake and then did that. And then actually before that, I had to get my boat wrapped and met with the folks at Gatorback. I started working with them and then went down, did a week of training for Shields. Super excited. Laurent, worked with Laurent down there and got that new recon. I know Jason and I have spent a lot of time talking about that, how much he enjoys that new motor. So we did some Lowrance training, got familiar with my recon. And then from there, I never came home. I went right to the Lake Sharp NWT. Interesting enough, you know, that body of water is typically small fish. And if you're able to get lucky and get an over, you know, that's kind of how it plays out. Well, ironically, I was on some big fish. In fact, I had caught a 30-incher, 27-incher. Our group had caught some other fish that were 27, 28-inchers. So We actually were really confident that we could get some big fish. And I guess, long story short, some of that fell apart. About 2 days before the tournament, I actually sensed that the fish were spawning right at that time frame. The morning, 2 days before the tournament started, the males were absolutely spewing all over the place, not just milking like normal. They were literally, it was like the gusher. And I was like, them fish spawned last night. I can just feel it. And we were fishing from like low 30s out to mid 40 foot depths. And there were fish everywhere, and a lot of big fish. Well, as tournaments happen, stuff changes. And that bite really started to fall apart that day. And we had put our eggs in that basket, so we were kind of in trouble and struggled through that event. And then from there, I had very little time to get myself ready. Came down to Otter Tail, I think, just for a couple of days. And the next thing you know, we're out at La Crosse in the Mississippi River. Dealt with some changing conditions there. Ultimately, with dropping water, I had fish going back and way back in some of the backwater areas and real shallow water. And right before the tournament, a lot of that water was, I couldn't even get back into. So put together actually a pretty good program out on the main river as those fish were sliding out, and was able to cash a check there. So that was good. One of my traveling partners, Bill Shimoda, was leading that tournament on day one. So ultimately, I guess in hindsight, we had it figured out. Bill, Jacob, L, and I all cashed a check there. We're all, in fact, Jacob was fishing right by the winner. Billy was leading the tournament, and I cashed a check. So we had a good event there. I literally came to the lake, was here just a couple days or a week maybe, and then headed up to Van Hook. And had some requests for some on-the-water Lowrance training. So this winter, or I guess late winter, early spring, I started putting the schedule together, and I thought, well, what better thing is to go up and do Lowrance training for 4 days? And then reached out to a friend of mine, asked him if he wanted to fish that tournament, and we ended up getting in. So I did Lowrance training for 4 days, pre-fished for 2.5, and then fished that derby. And I love Sakakawea. Actually led that event on day one, which was super cool. But again, tournaments, and it seems like every event I fished, I've been on moving fish nonstop. I was fishing the West Shoreline, and those fish literally were vacating the West Shore as that event was playing out. So got on the struggle bus and let the struggle bus lead me around on day two, and ended up falling down quite a ways. But had a lot of fun, caught a lot of big fish. The bite up there, I was kind of surprised, wasn't as good as what I was expecting. We actually struggled like the entire time to catch a volume of fish, but we were able to put together a pretty good program to catch some bigger ones, and then wrapped that event and literally was just on the lax for a day and a half. And finally I got my wheels on the ground, and they're not moving. So it was a good time for you to reach out and for us to do this, because I'm finally taking some deep breath today. So that's a real quick synopsis of where I've been and what's all happened for literally, I guess, let's see, April, May, about 2.5 months. So
I'll try to have a couple of decent questions here for each of these tournaments, because I think it's just kind of fun to do like a little bit of a dive. You know, we could, you know, yeah. Wormholes sometimes get a little bit carried away sometimes, but like the meaningful things that you could take from even going back to like Lake Sharp, you know, it's a Missouri River reservoir, but interestingly, you know, a lot of people have never fished a tournament there. Had you ever fished a tournament there?
One tournament I fished there, 2014. That was actually the very first event that Troy Morris and I fished, when we started Artificial Eyes. That was actually where it all started. Like the first week of April of 2014. So that was the only time I had fished there.
So like effectively a decade plus ago.
Yeah.
I found that to be interesting. Like, and I know everybody kind of says, you know, a lot of you high level guys, you know, everybody appreciates when you go somewhere new because it's just, it's fresh, it's new. You get to break it down, the, you know, the essence of, you know, just everybody's a passionate angler and likes to fish in new places. But like, does going to a place like that in the spring, you know, where it kind of maybe a little bit inevitably is a smaller fish tournament? Like, I'm just sort of curious, like, you know, there's that going somewhere new is a fun thing to do, but is that really like on your bucket list of new places to go? I'm sort of curious, like how that response was when you saw it on the schedule and how those discussions start happening and sort of like that pre-planning process, like how that all goes for that specific tournament.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I do love going to new places. It seems like when you start going to the same places year after year on the same time frame, I actually feel like a lot of what we enjoy about traveling and fishing tournaments goes away. And a lot of the, maybe our skill or maybe our ability to break water down, sometimes you start to fall into a rut of this is what we did the last time we were here, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the one thing I do enjoy about fishing somewhere near new. And it really doesn't matter where. I do love the Missouri River system. You know, North and South Dakota just have such a beauty. There's so much wildlife. And they're just, I don't know, it's just a completely different thing. But yeah, Sharp is notorious for small fish. And basically, I don't want to say getting lucky because you can, you know, there's definitely skill involved. I don't want to take anything away from the ones that caught big fish. But what's ironic about that is, and it's, I've seemed to find this a lot of times for myself, is where guys are saying, oh, the bite is pretty easy and you want to go to these areas. It seems like I get into a mess where I struggle to catch those same fish. And it's, if I recognize it soon enough and do my own thing, it seems to have a better success. And this event was kind of the same where everyone was kind of talking, stay closer to town. The pre-spawners are up there. And I actually went 50 miles south of the ramp and down in the Big Bend area and started catching big fish and a lot of fish in general. And, you know, ultimately it was probably the demise of my tournament, but it was really fun breaking that water down in practice. I was actually fishing in and amongst the trees, and I never really predicted that that would be a thing this early in the season. And boy, it was fun. We were fishing 4-inch gulp minnows, and it was amazing to me how many times we would lose a fish and you would just stop reeling, shake it twice, and that fish would literally smoke the jig and gulp better than it did the first time, and you'd get the fish in. So that was a pretty wild thing. In fact, we had kind of a phrase in the boat the whole week, like, you're not using live bait, just stop. And it was crazy how many times that fish would re-hit the bait and away you'd go.
When you look back on that tournament, do you just try to get out of there and survive and get on to the next one? Or there's some like real takeaways, you know, maybe you learned something about.
Well, the one thing that I learned when I literally visually and physically seen the fish disappearing out of the deep water, I should have known right then and there, just, you know what's happening, trust your instincts, get up on the bank and get up in the shallow water from where you were catching the deep fish and start finding where these fish went up shallow. And I just got behind the eight ball and didn't do that quick enough. On day two, I did that and kind of just freed my mind and went up, and we really had a good day. And I just got caught up on day one trying to make, you know, the memories of the couple days before that stick. And I guess that's kind of a good lesson, you know, as a guy that travels a lot, I feel like we're always learning. And I made a mistake there and tried to catch them where they weren't. You know, they were there, but stuff changes. And, you know, as someone that talks a lot about trusting your electronics, we could see it clear as a bell. The volumes of walleyes that were out in that deep water literally were missing. And in the spring like that, around the spawn, I'm already fishing deep. there's only one real direction they're going to go, and that's shallow. And you just got to chase them, you know, back up shallow. And I got behind it and didn't do a very good job of fishing, you know, right in the moment. And that's what I learned from that one for sure. And the same thing played out as seems like it always does in those events. The fish up north, the ones that, you know, if you're able to get a couple of those overs, and the bigger overs, they had good tournaments. And if you didn't, you struggled, and a lot of close weights. So yeah, it kind of turned out to a survival thing. I was really confident. And I guess I'm sure a lot of guys have said this in a lot of tournaments, but I feel like if that event would have been held, you know, 4 or 5 days earlier, we absolutely would have crushed some big fish. Like I said, we had numerous big fish down there, and that's something that most guys aren't able to put together. In fact, a lot of the guys I compete against, when I had posted after the event about all the big fish, they were literally like jaws on the floor, like, holy crap, you guys are literally catching those big fish. And that's just not something that really happens there very often. So yeah, it was a interesting event that way. Probably caught more big fish than I've ever caught in a situation like that, but ultimately didn't bring him to the scale, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I definitely like giving you a little bit of grace in the conversation, because as like what I can take away, like as a non-tournament angler and a lot of people listening to this, what you're saying there is kind of meaningful about, you know, you talk about you took damage in the tournament. You were punished in the tournament because you were behind the fish, and you say you could see it, you know, trusting your electronics. But I mean, you're, you know, to try to paint that picture, sort of depict that, you know, you're talking about, you know, you pre-fished there, you had to go check it. You're really just talking about a few hours of decision-making, it's not like a big deal. Now from a tournament perspective, I see what you're saying. It affected your finish, you know, whatever. But from a fishing perspective, I go out every single time, and I'm probably going to start where I left off last time. And it might be 3 weeks ago, the last time I was there. So that, like, this process happens to every angler all the time. And I, you know, and so I love, you know, you're talking about it. Realistically, you probably, the fact that you have a little bit better day two than day one, or you just feel like you fished better, like, dude, sometimes it takes us, you know, it takes a mere mortal like myself 3 months to do what you did in like a day and a half. You see what I'm saying? So there's a big takeaway I can take from that. I appreciate you, you know, I appreciate your honesty, and you're talking about it like, maybe a little bit regretful, or, you know, you're trying to, you know, you're maybe punishing yourself a little bit. But man, I can totally appreciate what you did, you know, in 2 days of tournament fishing where you had some memories. Of course, you're going to try to make good on that. But, you know, if you could take back, you know, a half a day, you would have moved up shallower. But, man, the fact that you realized that in 1 day or 1.5 days is kind of a big deal. It takes me a long time to figure that stuff out sometimes. You know what I'm saying? That's a big deal.
And I think that's one of the things that kind of separates, you know, guys that have been fishing tournaments and separates the guys that fish a lot of tournaments, you know, and maybe do it professionally and have a lot of success, is that ability to make those decisions on the fly and try to make that happen. And it's a challenge, and don't get me wrong. And yeah, there's part of me that's, you know, I guess got some pride that I was able to catch them, but there's still, you know, I'm trying to do this to do well. And so when I struggle, I feel like the only way to get better is to have some self-analyzation. And I can tell you numerous instances where I've learned after a tournament what's gone wrong. And if you can try to not have that happen again, then, you know, you're steps ahead, I guess. You know, what's the phrase? There's nothing wrong with doing something wrong, but if you continue to do it over and over, then you're just a fool, right?
Yeah, so it's like fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. So it's like, okay, I got to make the adjustments, and the next time I just got to trust, you know, you just got to trust your ability. When you see things happening, you got to throw caution into the wind sometimes and be like, you know what? Yeah, that's what was going on, but I need to be worried about what is going on.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of guys do get caught up in, you know, yesterday or last week or 2 weeks ago or whatever the story is.
Are you always going into like day one of a tournament? Do you always have those levels of like contingency plans? I suppose the season and the pattern has a huge effect on that. And man, when you're fishing those transition times of year, your contingency plans aren't just spot A, spot B, spot C. I mean, you're literally going to try to fish a different pattern if this pattern goes away.
This is what's funny about this. And it's funny that you bring this question up. So I fished with a rookie at the Van Hook tournament, and he had never fished a tournament. And he asked me before the tournament started, he said, okay, I know what we're going to do to start, but what's plan B? And I just looked at him and I said, I'll tell you what plan B is, or we'll figure that out on the water. Because right now, and he goes, he actually told the story best. He said, I think it was an interview with Cam Miller when he was still at NDSU as a quarterback. And they asked him what you're going to do after college. And he said, I'm going to be an NFL quarterback. And they said to him, the reporters asked him, they said, well, if that doesn't pan out, what's plan B? And his response was, and it was funny because I didn't even know this until last week at Van Hook. Cam responded with, my dad taught me, if you're already looking at plan B, you've given up on plan A. Mm. And I think that is a phenomenal way to approach it because, you know, planning out how your day or your tournament is going to go out can be honestly one of the worst plans you can do, because I feel like you enter an event because you have confidence in your fishing ability, you have confidence in your fishing instincts. And the worst thing that you can do is try to pre-plan how the day is going to go, because I can tell you, as someone that's done this for over 20 years, the best plan is the one that you don't have, because when you have a good tournament, it's because you are able to make adjustments on the fly and your instincts kick in and they override, you know, maybe what you thought was going to happen instead of like what you know is happening. There's something about like, yeah, I mean, maybe you have an idea that like the fish are really set up and you don't foresee a lot of stuff changing, but, and you're like, you know, don't let me say spin out, or we can't fish a bunch of spots or whatever that is. And there are instances like that, but there's also a time when you get conditions that change, the best thing you can do is literally go out and just go fishing. In fact, a lot of times I'm like, okay, if this was a practice day, what would I do right now? You know, we're not catching them the way we set out to this morning. And, you know, how would I do it in practice when I'm trying to find them and I'm trying to develop a new program? And that sometimes is the best thing you can do, is just throw caution into the wind and let your instincts kick in and start doing it.
The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. I want to kind of deep dive a little bit more into that Van Hook tournament and maybe get a little bit of a play-by-play if you're comfortable with that.
Sure, absolutely.
I also really want to include the story of your partner, like, you know, little bit more detail on that, because you fished it with a rookie, somebody that had never fished a tournament before. Like,
yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I think Kale is a phenomenal guy, a phenomenal angler. unfortunately for him, he had to fish with a guy that fishes a lot of tournaments and has a, let's call it a routine, and is maybe, so he got put into a tougher situation because I'm used to fishing, you know, pro-am or pro-co tournaments. And so, you know, I kind of take that approach that I've got to make a lot of decisions. I've got to make this happen. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. It was great to be able to bring him with and have him experience, you know, what it's like when decisions get magnified, the clock is ticking at a different pace, and, you know, those decisions on the fly got to happen. And, yeah, he got the full realm of it. In fact, a lot of people know we were leading on day one, and it's hard to even say this, but it was not an easy day. You know, we only probably caught 7 or 8 walleyes that day, over 19 inches, happened to have 3 great big ones, and then 2 really good ones. And then, which is kind of the way it happens in some tournaments that you have a lot of success, you're not really handling a big volume of fish or walleyes. You're trying to focus on the bigger ones. And obviously, with forward-facing sonar, we concentrated a lot on that. Yeah, it was interesting. It was actually kind of fun to have them because I got to hear from, say, like a third party what it was like to be in the back of the boat when my head is down and you got the Lowrance trolling motor going back and forth and you're trying to find fish. And then it's almost like a pointer when you're out pheasant hunting and, you know, you spot the one fish that you want to catch and it's like you get locked in and you make the right cast and you'll get them to bite. So yeah, the whole experience I think was interesting. It was an awesome experience I think for both of us.
How did day one compare to your pre-fishing?
So interesting enough, I got no problem sharing this. I mean, we were fishing the West Shore, and in practice, it was pretty crazy because the West Shore was packed with boats. And anyone that knows me at all knows I don't like fishing by hardly anybody. So a lot of the areas that I found were utilizing my electronics, but then there was also just gaps where there was no boats. And I'd pull in there, scan around, and we would catch what we could catch. And literally the day before the tournament, there started to be a few less boats. And I was like, well, hopefully we can get some of our productive areas. I don't really want to fish by people, so we're just going to keep kind of grinding down the shoreline. And it was interesting because come day one, I'm literally one of the last boats out, and I'm hoping to myself, I can have any quarter mile stretch of the shoreline because I feel like there's going to be, you know, 3/4 of the field is going to be on the shore. And I get over to that West Shoreline, and I'm literally like, where are all the boats? I mean, there was maybe, I don't know, within a 2 or 3 mile stretch, there was probably 15, 20 boats. I was like, wow, like they are not here. And I was tickled pink because then I had room to roam. I had, you know, long stretches of water where I could just put the trolling motor down and just keep looking. That's what we ended up doing. But again, you talk about instincts. As the day progressed and we had a big basket, I could like just feel and see that the walleyes were dissipating, and there just wasn't a whole lot left on the shore. And I really don't, we'll get into day two in a second, but I couldn't really like put my finger on what was going on. Well, by the end of the day, there was very few boats and there was literally very few walleyes scattered along the bank and out from there. So I started, my senses were starting to get a little nerved up because I'm like, something's going on and I don't know what or why, but clearly Sakakawea is the home of, if people are catching fish, the boats just absolutely multiply. And if they ain't catching fish, there is a big subtraction. And that's exactly what happened on day one, and then actually proceeded right into day two again.
Yeah, man. And, you know, it can be mentioned, it's like early June on Van Hook in Sakakawea. It, not only is this a really a fun tournament with 150 30 some boats or whatever, but it's arguably probably one of the most popular recreational boat landings in the country for walleye anglers. So it's like, you know, not only do you got the tournament field there, but there's probably three times as many just people fishing, you know, or maybe it feels like that. But, you know, that's all, like you say, like that's all going on. Absolutely. But what kind of pattern were you on? Did you feel like you were on one or were, you know, I mean, because there was people catching, like I'm familiar with it up there enough, you know, that like there was reports of people catching fish shallow. There was people catching fish deep, there was all kinds of different stuff going on. Yep. So I'm just curious what you'd say about what you were seeing.
Primarily, we were fishing from 8 to like 17 feet. Fishing a jig and a crawler, which I feel like was maybe a technique not used by as much of the field. But it was not a traditional early June bite. I know I talked to Jason at the rules meeting, and I feel like when Jason and I have a conversation, it's pretty transparent. And mm-hmm. I told him, like, this is not the bite I had expected. I expected to handle a lot of fish every day and then try to weed through them and get the bigger ones. And the volume of walleyes that were in the Van Hook arm was significantly less than what I had anticipated before I got there. But yeah, I was literally using forward facing sonar. Almost every fish came on a jig and a crawler, through practice. I did catch some fish on a jig and a chub. And we did catch some on jig and like 4 and 5 inch jerk shads. Out deeper, but it was literally just forward facing sonar, finding the right marks and then trying to get the bait presented to them in the right way. And, you know, I hear a lot, people talk, I think it gets, I don't know, like people use always and never, and I try to stay away from those discussions because primarily when people are fishing a jig and a crawler, especially, you know, using forward facing sonar, The story is you drop the jig in front of the fish's nose, you drop it down to the bottom, and then the fish will pick it up. And I'll tell you, some of the best bites I had all week was getting that jig to float off the front of the fish's nose and just keep swimming it at that same level and let them just load up on it as that bait's coming back to you. So I would say I probably caught 2/3, maybe 3/4 of my fish that way. It seemed like if the jig fell to the bottom, yeah, I caught some, but it was definitely not as high of a percentage of getting them hooked up as it was, if I could catch them without going to the bottom. It seemed like the bites were a lot better.
So getting into day two, you know, you're already, you know, your radar's already going off. Your experience is telling you something in your gut that and right, this is like reservoir tournament fishing 101, right? Like,
so what was crazy is, so day two comes about and a couple of things went into play. I knew the wind was going to start howling, you know, late morning, early afternoon, and that put a lot of pressure on because I knew I would not be able to fish the way I was fishing when the wind started to blow. So I was kind of mentally prepared from that, which probably put way too much pressure on my morning. Well, the interesting tidbit of the morning is I probably had 3 fish in the first hour and a half, 2 hours that would follow my bait and literally like either just barely nip at the back of the crawler or just literally stay 1 to 2 feet behind it and never bit. Well, again, I'm smart enough, at least on most of these reservoirs, that I don't ever fish spots, I would say, on the Missouri River. It's more areas because those fish, they do move and they transition constantly. Well, I moved down about 1.5 miles to another stretch of water that I wanted to look at on day two. And I give a lot of credit to Cale. He looks and he goes, "Do you see how cold the water temp is?" I'm like, holy moly. It was 3 degrees colder in 1.5 miles.
Hmm.
And I give a lot of credit, but it might have been an exclamation point on spinning myself out of control because I was like, oh boy, like we got cold water literally rushing up the shoreline. And like I said, I don't know if it went all the way across the bay, but I can tell you on the west shore, just 1.5 miles south of where I had primarily fished, it was 3 degrees colder. And so then I started thinking, oh boy, you better maybe start running up the bank going further. And then as I kind of knew was going to happen, the wind started to blow. And at that point I was like, okay, now we're almost in survival mode and I hope we can catch some. And it was just one of those deals where that's how it played out. Day two, if I said there was only 20 boats on the West Shore on day one, there was down to like 6 to 8 of them on day two. And this is going from maybe 50 to 100, 3-4 days before that. So I don't know exactly, you know, what happens up there. This is the first time I fished this event, mm-hmm. but they clearly transitioned off that bank, and whether they went north or they went out to some of the mid lake structure, you know, some of the islands and the reefs that are out in the middle, or potentially even went up into the shallower than we were fishing. But either which way, again, I got behind the fish and I really don't even know where they went. And then I just know that the wind decided to take its toll on me and made it pretty difficult to present the way I wanted to present. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like gusting 40 or whatever by the...
Oh, yeah. At least that. Yep.
Yeah, it was insane. Yeah. You guys had a front.
The entire Van Hook arm was white from Whitecaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, it was like a crazy debilitating type of wind from a fishing standpoint, for sure. You know, but I find a couple of those elements are kind of interesting, you know, just from a fishing standpoint, but it's you tournament anglers that experience these things. Cause you know, a lot of the recreational fishermen would have looked at the forecast and didn't even go out, you know, but as a tournament angler, you got to go out, you know?
Exactly.
And so like everything that started happening in and around that, I just find all those things like very interesting, just from at a fishing level. And you know, a lot of times you talk about maybe the bite turning off in other scenarios where the fish don't move, but they get moody. But on these reservoirs, the fish flat out move, you know? And, and so I find that to be interesting. So yes, when you, under perfect conditions, you would have still had to go try to find fish, you know, but then you had like horrible conditions to just find them even. So yeah, dude, like the deck gets kind of stacked against you sort of in hindsight, right? I mean, you're going to try to die on that hill because you got what you got, a couple days of pre-fish and you're there. But it's, you know, all those things are kind of interesting that the fish are just like, they're vacating the pattern that you are on versus just slumping and they're there and you can't catch them.
Right. Exactly. And that's the one thing, you know, about our electronics now. It's like, it's easy to be able to see them. And I just feel like, especially in a tournament atmosphere, I look at it, it's like, I only need to catch, you know, get 5 big bites a day to have a really good tournament. And you start to talk about that, you know, you get half as many as you need and you had a terrible day. So, you know, when you're dealing in small volumes of numbers, when you're fishing for bigger fish, you know, it becomes a lot of pressure and I miss a couple bites or, you know, you get a couple of fish to follow your stuff and they just don't commit. And you're like, that's an opportunity that got away from me that I don't know how you can't really get it back, you know? And we had some of that go on. Like I said, then you got to stay calm and patient and knowing that we had really unfavorable conditions coming our way. I think I got kind of jumpy and was like, I need to find a higher volume of fish than just, you know, catching 5. Because really, even on day one, I would say out of an 8-hour day, I probably had a 2-hour window when the fishing was really good. Other than that, it was pretty skinny and, mm-hmm. And I didn't really handle hardly any fish even on day one. So yeah, it's interesting how in a tournament scenario, how close success and failure truly are when you're dealing with five fish. You know, it's you know, a lot of guys are when you're out fun fishing or something, you're trying to deal with volumes of fish and you're trying to catch a bunch. But to be successful in a tournament, you literally most times need five of the right bites.
You and Bill haven't had like a heart to heart yet, have you, after this tournament, since you both like leading these like wildly competitive tournaments after day one?
So we were in a little Snapchat group with, there's like 5 of us in it and that we travel with. And the boys were all pretty excited for me again, just like we were for Bill leading the NWT. And one of them texted me after day two and they're like, how'd it go? And I said, I won't repeat exactly what I said, but I said, I struggled. Let's just leave it there. And Bill's response was, oh, no, you didn't. Like, oh, no. Like, we got to get rid of this mojo out of our group because we have.
Yeah, but leading after day one is good mojo.
Yeah, basically the last two major events, either Shimoda or I have led. So that's, I guess it's a good omen, but it's a bad omen because neither one of us brought it home. So
yeah, but that's so tough to do, though. You know, I mean, that's tough to do. So it's like, it's just so hard to even imagine or have that level of expectation, but it is cool to see you guys fishing well, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. You look at it, whether it's the NWT or like this great big local regional event, whatever you want to call it. It's like, you really got to have things line up to put a bag like that together and to have all those guys looking up going, geez, we're chasing him, you know, and it's fun to be the rabbit. It definitely changes the dynamics for your second day. And it was pretty fun watching Kale think, well, this is going to be fun. You know, I'm going to fish one tournament and we're going to win this thing. I was trying to be very cautionary with him. Like, hey, this is, it's going to be a different kind of a mojo going out on day two, because now all of a sudden there's a whole added pressure where there's no question. Everyone in the field is going to be looking at how we do at the end of, at the end of day two versus, you know, yeah, there's always people paying attention, but you can get lost in the shuffle if you're somewhere in the middle and people are just like, oh, whatever, they had a okay day. But
yeah,
it's a different pressure when you're in the lead and everything gets a lot tighter, and you know, it's harder again to keep that freedom and to go out there and fish free for sure.
You know, maybe just sort of using this as an example, but kind of a big picture topic of like, when you do have a big wind come up or like cold front or like, you know, like these kind of poor conditions, what are some things that you would do or think about to find fish? Like I said, like this is sort of like, we can use this tournament as an example. I think it's kind of more like a gateway into this conversation, but like whether you're on the Great Lakes or whatever, like you tournament anglers, you're just tasked with, you know, just, absurd expectations that, you know, you go fishing when basically like no right-minded recreational angler would ever go out, but there's so much to learn from that, you know, and again, the expectation has to be lowered a little bit where, you know, maybe you just got to go find one cool bite. But like when the conditions hit like that, what are some things that you're thinking about to go find some fish?
Well, really, I tried to make a, I thought I did a good job the night before the tournament, the second day, knowing it was going to blow. Like, I got some rods ready where I upsized my jigs, because I knew you're going to be unable to throw the same size that you're throwing without the wind. We prepared with dragging more chubs around. You know, I hadn't really caught a fish on a chub much of practice. I didn't really do it, but I just felt like that's going to be maybe a pattern or a technique that will put some fish in the boat if they get a little funky. And, you know, those are the biggest things I tried to brace myself for. But, you know, again, when you're in the lead, it's just a different mentality. It's like, it's hard to not go back to where we started. Or the areas. And we'd really been, you know, kind of owning in on a pattern within, I suppose I was fishing a 2 to 3 mile stretch of water. It's not like, you know, I was fishing a couple spots. I literally was fishing, long stretches of shoreline and, hoping that I could just, you know, see the right fish pop out and probably tried to run around and find a hot bite too much on day two, rather than just, leave that trolling motor in the water and just keep looking. And I don't, like I said, you only got to stumble on a few of them.
Yeah. Yeah, man. No, those are actually solid recommendations that I could never, you know, think about nearly enough. Cause as soon as the conditions start getting a little unsavory and I'm like not being as efficient, I'm automatically thinking like, where can I tuck around a point? Where can I get out of the wind? The last thing I'm thinking is tie on a little bit heavier jig and keep catching these. You know, it's like, yeah, dude, I think that is like, that in itself is actually a pretty sweet little nugget right there of like just prepare for those conditions to change a little bit and have some more gear ready, you know, yeah, dude, I think that is actually kind of excellent.
Yeah, and I think that's something that tournaments kind of prepare you for, is like, I mean, almost expect the unexpected. And I know something I tell my co-anglers every day is like, mistakes are going to happen. Let's just try to minimize what we can control and try to put your best foot forward and, you know, minimizing mistakes and trying to get out in front of things that you know are going to happen can kind of help you. And then inevitably, fish have fins and they're going to swim, and, you know, conditions that we can't necessarily see are going to change under the water. And like I said, I couldn't physically see that the cold water was pushing up the shoreline. And I guess, you know, in hindsight, I wish that I would have put that together sooner and just started running up the shoreline to see if that water just stayed and maintained its temperature as you went up the shoreline.
Yeah, and you had, what, 2 days of pre-fish, you know, typically for like an NWT or whatever, you know, usually you guys are there 5, 6, maybe 7 days, yep. You know, like that's like, you know, so that, you know, got to give yourself a little bit of grace there too. Like, or I certainly do, just because, you know, that's just what it is. That Van Hook's a big piece of water. So I mean, yeah, with a couple days of pre-fish, you're only going to do so much. You're not working with a team, you know, right.
Trying to get it dialed in. And, you know, we don't have to beat around the bush. Like, everybody knows that there's a lot of big fish that get caught like out on shell and stuff. And to be honest, the type of angler I am, I literally never pre-fished shell. I never even drove by it. I had no interest or desire in going out there because that is not something in somewhere that I'm going to fish, because there's just too much traffic, too much pressure.
Yeah, it's a boat magnet.
Yeah, and I always tell everybody, I'm not good enough to catch fish in the mix of 30 boats. I got to go find 5 of the dumbest fish in the system. So I try to stay away from everyone so that I only want to try to catch 5, where, you know, some of these best spots where you pile boats in. That's the other thing, is like, you start doing the math. If I need 5 fish and I got a 100-yard stretch by myself, I only need 5 of them. You put 20 boats in that same 100 yards, now all of a sudden you need 100 fish. Yeah. So in order to compete, I always feel like it's way better to be out on my own. And I try to eliminate luck as much as I can. So I don't want to be the boat in the middle of 50 of them. So there's things like, you know, what is also interesting to me is I never really put together the Van Hook area, like where that tournament boundary is not that much water. There is a ton of spots and a ton of areas where you can catch walleye. But really, you know, it's like 9 miles or something by whatever the width is. I don't know, 7, 8 miles, whatever it is. So it's really not a large volume of water to look at and fish. So, and that's the other different thing, is trying to mentally tell yourself that I can run from one side to the other side and back again. And I'm used to fishing NWT waters where
you got to have a gas stop.
Yeah. I might be 50 miles from takeoff and I'll catch a spot 10 miles away. Well, there's literally no space within Van Hook that makes you do that. And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'll tell you, I don't get a chance to fish as many local or regional events, and it is a lot of fun to run into a lot of people that, you know, follow me through the National Walleye Tour, and they'll come up and say hi. They, you know, they can't miss the Happy Harry's boat on the water. So they'll be driving by telling me that they're pulling for you or something. And it's just really cool. It's really cool to connect with a lot of those tournament anglers. There's so many good fishermen up in that Van Hook area. And,
oh yeah.
You know, it's just a phenomenal area to fish. So yeah, I had a great time, and I'm really looking forward and hoping I can do it again next year.
Yeah, dude, I think that is one of the coolest tournaments.
Yeah.
And it does attract a lot of great anglers, even just from the surrounding area. You know, not everybody's a local, right? It's like the locals are tough to get by. They're not going to let you off easy, but there's some great Montana guys that come over.
Yeah.
There's some Minnesota teams. And maybe this is an unfair question, or maybe it's just a non-talker. You can turn me down if you want. But like, if you had like 5 days to pre-fish, and you knew that there was going to be like a massive day two weather change, so this is like a hindsight 2020 type of question. What are some things that you do in your pre-fish? You know, because we're already talking about how you got to be very careful how you handle contingency plans. But like, how do you prepare yourself better? Can you? Is there something you can do? Can you go look for, you know, I guess, and you never know you're going to be leading after day one. You know, so it's a totally unfair question, but I'd like to just kind of dabble in it a little bit because I'm always curious about that. This isn't even a tournament person, entirely a tournament person conversation. I literally dwell on this stuff every time I go out. Is like, how do I manage my memories? How do I grow as an angler and go find new fish? How do I take tough conditions and just make the best of it? Like, I'm always striving for this.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things you can try to do. If I'd add a few more, you know, just maybe a higher number of spots, you know, in general. I felt like we did do some things in practice that had set us to the point where I had tried to anticipate. You know, I had caught some fish up in the northwest corner. So I actually tried to catch them there on day two. There was, I tried to get them on jigs and plastics because that's an easier presentation. It's less finessey than a jig and a crawler. And I caught some, but not a volume of them. You know, there's just things like that I actually did look forward to, but you know, without time or as much time as maybe would have been beneficial to put some more of that together. I mean, we definitely did experiment around with some of those things to try and make it happen. Again, not being a big guy on pulling chubs around, it's just not a way I just traditionally like to fish. It's you probably could have tried to dial in a program that way better, where, you know, we could do that. And yeah, so I don't know. I mean, there's a few things that you can definitely prepare yourself for as far as like, can you catch fish out of the wind? Are there areas that if the wind, you know, blows super hard, can you make it happen? And then, you know, trying to execute. And honestly, on day two, I was going to run south further and get kind of out of the wind. But the problem was, is the cold water stopped me from going down there because I was like, well, as I move south and I'm losing water temp, I don't know this for sure, but I'm thinking it's going to be even colder the farther I go south. So now, you know, that kind of took that game plan out. So now I'm spinning around at a 180 going, well, let's try to run north. And it was weird this year because a lot of those walleyes just weren't up in, you know, I didn't find them like going north as what I thought. And even I had did some Lowrance training up there last year, the same week. And a lot of those fish were quite a bit north, of where I was fishing this year, last year. So yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of weird how walleyes on Sakakawea transition, and certain areas of the, lake are better some years. And it's just kind of the way it played out.
Yeah. I wonder if you'd have just ran all the way south to start with. Do you think that,
yeah,
do you think that you would have even paid attention to that water temperature deal?
that's a great point, you know, and it's, there's part of me that's playing cartwheels in my head too, going, what if the water temp just wasn't going to play a big deal, and actually noticing that the water temp was cooler actually created more problems than it was good, because if I don't notice it and I catch one or two, you know, that opens up a lot of extra water going south for me. And, you know, I feel like it affected, because water temp drops, especially early summer, are never a good thing.
Yep.
So I believe in my heart it was good to notice that, but there's always that devil's advocate. There's always the devil sitting on the shoulder going, well, we would have bit in that cold water, you know, but you don't know. And it's why I guess I still love fishing tournaments, because the more I think I know, the less I know. And the more I've learned, the more I have yet to learn. And I think as anglers, just in general, when you stop learning and you stop paying attention to both what makes you successful and also what hinders you, when you stop paying attention to that stuff, that's when you might as well call it quits, because you know, it's an ever evolving sport, and the fish are ever evolving. And I feel like, you know, to be successful, you got to keep evolving with them.
Yeah, dude. Well, gosh, a couple days of pre-fish leading after day one, you showed up with your skills and you had some stuff figured out, man. 'Cause that, That's that in itself is not easy to do, but putting two awesome days back to back on any of these Missouri River reservoirs is that's like one of the toughest things to do out there. So I definitely appreciate the stories, and I like, you know, just, you know, your willingness to talk about it and share those stories, because there's so much to take away from it. And yeah, dude, I think you definitely had something good going on, man. Hopefully you got out of there with some mojo.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Went to Mille Lacs and whacked on some tough finicky walleyes there too. In fact, it's amazing how much that fishery has rebounded. Those fish are extremely healthy, but boy, right now are they finicky. Like you'll fish in a group of six or eight of them, and they will swim up to your bait and look and violently swim back down away. And then all at once you'll get one to bite. And it is, I don't know, that the place is finally stocked full of big jumbo perch. And if you guys go to my Facebook, you'll see a couple of those fish are really big and fat. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. Caught some jumbo perch, caught a bunch of nice walleyes, and was kind of a change of pace. And now I'm looking forward to doing some of the business side of my life and kind of relaxing here for a couple weeks before I hit the road to Alpena, Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys got a little bit of a break before you got you're over on Huron.
Yep. So we got, again, another event over holiday. I'll be gone over the 4th of July pre-fishing, but a completely different animal going to one of the biggest bodies of water, deepest, angriest. I mean, last year was the first time I'd been there, and that place is an angry, rough riding place. So, yeah, we'll have to get out there and make some stuff happen.
Yeah, and you're, I guess I didn't look at, I don't remember exactly where you're at, but I know you're in the top 40 for AOI and the NWT. So you're sitting inside the cut for the championship, a couple more stops to go in the regular season, opportunities to move up, but either way you're in there right now. So that's solid. And yeah, dude, what are some, any other, as far as a closer here, we've been on the phone for a while and I appreciate all the info and the stories, man, but any other things to get us caught up if I don't know when I'm going to talk to you next?
No, it's just doing it all. You know, we're trying to take care of sponsorships. That's kind of the part of a life of a professional angler. That's what this trip to Mille Lacs was to help out OK Tire, who's wrapped my truck the last couple of years, and take some customers that won a raffle to go fishing with me. So that was a lot of fun. I've been working on a lot of Gatorback stuff. If you haven't checked that out, it's a great thing to check out. And we'll be having that Happy Harry's Ranger floating all over Otter Tail here, hopefully over the next 10 days, trying to catch some of those walleyes. And some guys call them my pets out here, so we get to go out and catch some of those and eat a few fresh Minnesota walleyes.
Yeah, dude, what's your promo code for Happy Harry's?
Right? That was the funnest thing about being up at Van Hook is those guys were, a lot of the guys would stop me and be like, hey, you got some beer inside that boat we can buy? And I said, no, you're going to have to go to Fargo and Grand Forks. They got five wonderful locations and best selection and phenomenal prices. So, yeah, you got to get to Fargo and Grand Forks. In fact, they got their Summer Spectacular sale going on right now. So great specials to be had.
Right on, man. Right on. I appreciate that. That's awesome. Yeah, dude. Well, Corey, I appreciate the time, dude. And it's always like a little short notice, and I'm always thinking about you, always rooting for you, always thinking about you and Bill and Jake. I got to connect with him here in town someday soon. Yeah, dude, as soon as you came and fished Sakakawea in the backyard here for me, I couldn't leave you alone after that. I was going to have to get at you, and so I appreciate it, dude.
I loved it. I loved fishing the event, and ironically, I was born and raised in Western North Dakota and fished every square inch of Sakakawea, but the one stretch of water I've probably fished the least is the Van Hook Arm. I usually don't get up that way historically, so it was a lot of fun exploring a lot of that water, and I can't wait to get back up there again. And boy, you know, North Dakota people sure have a blessed fishery in both Lake Sakakawea and Devil's Lake. I mean, I travel all over the United States fishing, and those are two of the best fisheries in the U.S. And I tell you what, everybody's got to get out and get some fishing in.
That's it, man.